Hello and welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. This is your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I have with me the spectacular Jason McClellan.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime gal.
Ah, that's the little frog on Bugs Bunny.
I have been called the little frog many times.
I love that guy. Hello, my baby. So, thank you for the reference to Bugs Bunny.
My pleasure.
So, I want to tell people about the guest that we have. This is exciting. It's John Greenwald. You might have seen on our YouTube a Skype interview with John Greenwald that we did recently talking about the Area 51 documents, because he got some really cool documents. If you haven't seen it, go to YouTube and check it out. But we're talking to him a little bit more about that and how the media handles this, but a lot more about his background, because he's got some really interesting background, how he's gotten these documents, when he started getting these documents, and more thoughts about his Freedom of Information Act requests. He's got tens of thousands of documents, so he's a great guy, great conversation. That's what we'll be talking about. Exciting stuff. Are you excited, Jason?
So excited.
Yeah. Cool. So, first, as usual, Jason and I review some of the news stories, just one each. If you want to hear all of the news stories, you can go to our YouTube and check out Spacing Out with Jason and Maureen. In fact, one was just posted on Friday, so good stuff there.
Or you can just send Alejandro $50, and he will personally read all of the news to you.
For $50?
You want more?
That'd take a while, yeah.
Okay.
Want more. For two,
sorry, I'm lowballing here.
That's special custom stuff. I want two bills, baby.
All right.
Two Benjamins. Okay, so, but why don't we'll give them a little freebie here. What is, from the last week, which is a story that you want to talk about here today?
Well, Mr. Alejandro, I want to talk about Rihanna.
Oh, yeah.
So, Rihanna was back in the news again, and for all of you people who get pissed off when I talk about celebrities, plug your ears for just a couple minutes here. But Rihanna back in the news. And Alejandro, this happened early last week. This story came out, and it is still making headlines today. There are news outlets posting stories about this. So Rihanna, apparently, and this is according to the Daily Star, is paying somebody in Nevada to send her UFO reports, to watch the skies and let her know, keep her apprised of anything UFO happening. And Rihanna has in the past mentioned her extraterrestrial UFO interests. And the Daily Star even quotes her brother as saying that she really believes there are UFOs. No one knows for sure, but Rhea and I definitely think they're out there. It kept us occupied as kids, and he's referring to something that Rihanna let out last year, that in Barbados as a child, her father used to make them sit outside and watch for UFOs. So she's very much into it and believes that we are going to encounter intelligent extraterrestrials in our lifetime. So very cool to see that she's actively interested and actually paying somebody to receive these UFO updates.
Yeah, it's funny because she's gotten a lot of news lately, and this has been one. And especially from your pictures, you know what? I forgot because I haven't seen her, or, you know, you hear about her. She's really hot. She's, like, very pretty.
Some people share your opinion, yeah. But, you know, it's good that she pays somebody because she's interested in this stuff. And I think she, you know, being a celebrity, she's too busy, and she also spends a lot of time under her umbrella, so...
Yeah.
You can't see the UFOs.
Umbrella. But enough about the UFOs. I'm talking about how hot she is. No, kidding. Yeah, that's really cool.
The first time.
It is really cool that she's really into this, and someone's got to let her know that all she has to do is visit openminds.tv on a regular basis.
That's right.
And she will get all the news.
I tweeted her on Twitter and told her that I'm available to go UFO watching with her.
Yeah, awesome. So hopefully she'll take you up on that.
Not a chance.
After she sees you on Joe Rogan, and somebody was saying that you look cool. You've gotten lots of compliments on your look, right? So hopefully she'll...
No, not really. But yeah, good old Richard Dolan commented on my cool appearance lately.
So you only got one, but that's a good one.
Yeah, I told him that I can't let him be the only cool-looking person in this field.
Yeah.
He appreciated that.
Good, good. Speaking of tweets, the story I want to cover, we started off as tweets but turned into videos, and we actually have quite a few stories with some interesting videos from last week. But this one, the videos are pretty interesting, and this is this baseball game in Canada. It's the Vancouver Canadiens, a minor league baseball game, and they were playing the Everett Aqua Sox the other day, and it was like September 3rd, and people started tweeting that they're seeing UFOs, and even the Vancouver Canadiens tweeted that there was this UFO out in the northwest of the field, and some people had tweeted some pictures, and luckily this guy who runs the website Vancouver UFO Sightings tweeted me some videos that he had discovered, because he's been following this and following all the tweets, so this has been a total tweeted story. And so I think we've got the best resource for all of the tweets and all of the videos on this, and it's being picked up a lot, so there's a lot of people looking at our story here. But the video is kind of interesting. I mean, and you have this weird looking object that comes up from behind the trees in some of the videos and stuff. You see, you know, it looks like these blue lights. And it's hard to say what it is. I mean, it doesn't look like a plane. I don't think it looks like a remote control plane either. The way it moves, I don't think it's a remote control kite. Now, it could be, which we've seen recently, is these roto helicopter things like the drones. And people have been buying these and putting LEDs on them. That's what it could be, because it does move up and it kind of moves back and forth. It could be someone just messing with people at the game, or just flying it around and unwittingly freaking out everybody at the game. But the videos are fun because people are looking and they're all shocked, and you see this news guy looking at it, and finally he turns his camera on it. And it's kind of funny because one of the videos, the lady says, "What do you think that is?" And some kid says, it's a restaurant. And she says, "A flying restaurant?" And she even writes on to YouTube, "You know, this kid said it was a flying restaurant, but I don't know restaurants that flies." I think he was referring to maybe it was up on a mountain or something.
Mm.
But in a different video, you do see it coming up from behind the trees. So it's definitely not a flying restaurant. So it's a really cool, kind of a neat story that is just gaining some legs, really. I think it's just been kind of written about on some paranormal sites and on a few of the Canadian sports sites. But who knows, it may go more viral. But that's kind of a cool story that we got up there. Were you able to check it out?
Yeah, the video is interesting, and you're right. We see so many of these interesting uses of LED lights now on so many different flying toys, and new flying toys come out all the time. You know, certainly cooler toys than they had when I was a kid. But possibility that that could be one of those interesting toys lit up, but it is definitely weird in that video, and lots of people saw it.
Right. Yeah, so it's kind of fun. It's pretty cool there. So that's my story of the week.
Well, it's a good story.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mentioned Rich Dolan. I just want to mention here that I did catch a little bit of his new show on TV.
Oh, right.
He's got the show on Chiller is the network, Chiller TV, and the show is called Real Fear. And what these guys are doing, this team of paranormal investigators that Rich is part of, they look into horror movies and look into the possible real stories that that inspired those movies, like the Blair Witch Project and Fire in the Sky and things like that. They dig into the backstory that could potentially be real. So kind of fun show, and
yeah,
you know, they travel around in this RV and it looks like a lot of fun. But.
So do you get to see Rich Dolan like getting freaked out and
yeah,
running away? And
he doesn't get as freaked out as James Fox did in Chasing UFOs.
Yeah,
I mean, it's hard to get more freaked out than James Fox, but no, Rich does a pretty good job. He gets a little scared.
So I don't think I get too scared. I've done a lot of paranormal. Paranormal stuff doesn't scare me, especially if I'm with other people.
You continue to say that, and you've said that as long as I've known you.
Have you seen me get scared? Not that
I've
done a whole
I
lot
can't
of...
wait to be on an investigation with you.
I'll
and
tell
see,
you.
What... See you wet your pants. That's just like, that will be an amazing moment for me in my life.
It's not going to happen. It would
all
only,
right.
The only thing that scares me is asking a pretty girl out on a date. I do get kind of scared.
Yeah, I've seen you get scared with that before.
Yeah, I get too scared. Now I run away.
Yep.
I like will run out the door and run down the street and keep running.
Right.
That's scary.
Yeah, I know, because you've asked me a couple of times, will you go talk to that girl for me?
No, I haven't. But a Sasquatch, you know, it's like, hey, buddy, I want a big Sasquatch hug. That's what I want from a Sasquatch.
And you'll be okay, because you don't eat beef jerky, so he's not going to get pissed at you or
yeah,
anything.
Yeah, totally. I won't be stealing his jerky or nothing.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you. Speaking of someone who's not a jerky, Jason McClellan, always be on the show, and thanks for not being a jerky on the show.
Oh, my pleasure, buddy.
All right. Well, speaking of another guy who's never a jerky, that is Mr. Greenwald. So let's hear what he has to say. I am happy to have John Greenwald, the founder of the Black Vault. Hello, John.
Hello. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a great pleasure. It's always fun to talk to you and see you at all the conferences and everything. And we talked recently, and we have a YouTube interview, where we talked about the Area 51 files.
That's right. Yeah, that's been big news the last month or so, for sure.
Yeah, we'll get more into that a little later, but I think it's kind of exciting that you had received, you know, files in the past that I think a lot of people don't know about and the media should pay more attention to, that were actual government files that had mentioned Area 51 previously.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. I was shocked, actually, on how the media handled this quote-unquote release. The reason is it never ceases to amaze me how much the media doesn't know about this topic. And I mean, I don't mean to talk bad, because I really don't mean it that way. But I think where I'm going with this is that, you know, there was an admission that Area 51 existed years ago. There's documents that show Area 51 as an actual place. There's documents that show that Area 51, specifically, they say Area 51, and I just want to kind of press that point, that the Department of Energy owned and operated a facility that they called Area 51. And I've got a document, a single-page document that came from the DOE that said, yes, we used to own and operate a facility known as Area 51, but it has since been turned over to the Department of Defense. And, you know, I mean, that single-page document shows you that this is a real place, that this is something that has been around for a while and acknowledged for a while. And that page was sent to me in 2001. So you're talking, you know, 12 years ago at this point, over 12 years ago, that this page was released. And that's not the only one, and it goes on from there. But, you know, just to kind of go back to my point is that, you know, if the media did their due diligence and actually looked into these topics, not only when it comes to the secrecy behind Area 51, but when it comes to the government secrets that are out there, but even specifically UFOs, I think that they would be really surprised on what type of information is out there and what they could find. And I just don't understand why they don't want to take the opportunity to look at it.
See, I agree with you. And when, for instance, there was an NBC story where they talked to Bob Lazar. But luckily, that reporter wasn't too bad. She had asked me about it, and I told her about how this all got started. And she's like, really? She didn't know any of this. So luckily, I informed her, and then she was able to get a hold of Bob Lazar and do an interview. But her title was really interesting because she says, you know, the UFO crowd meets this new disclosure with a resounding duh, which was kind of a cool angle, but she was the only one to take that. But you're right, and I don't think it's bad to call them out on that, and that they don't seem to feel they need to do their due diligence or even apply the basic fundamentals to proper journalism when it comes to this field.
Yeah, I agree. And one thing that I will say about Bob Lazar, and then I think that kind of the general public that may not be into this topic every single day like some of us might be, that there is a difference between a story like Bob Lazar, and I'm not saying that I either take away from his story or believe his story, so there's
right.
no opinion that I'm putting forth there. But my point is that even though Bob Lazar came out with this story, that wasn't an official acknowledgement. And if that was the only evidence we had to support that Area 51 existed, I could see the media's reluctance
right.
covering the story or looking into it. But I think what I really want to press is that not only is it just Bob Lazar's story, which again is not necessarily that confirmed slash official point of view, but you do have that, you know, eyewitness testimony. You have official documents also that go along with it that
right.
specifically talk about Area 51 and the installation known as Area 51. And it's very important to note that that's what they called it. And I just want to kind of put that point out there that I think the media has really missed the buck, so to speak, when it comes to covering these types of fringe topics.
Right. Yeah, George Knapp, the guy from KLAS TV in Las Vegas who broke the story of Bob Lazar, he's been writing about Area 51 forever. KLAS has been on the story since the early 80s, and I wrote about that, and I posted the interview and wrote more about it on our webpage and on Huffington Post. And he wrote me, and he was also very frustrated, like you are, with this, and said, thank you for demonstrating how this is pretty much a non-event that they're blowing out of the water. So he was kind of really happy about that. But just demonstrating the same frustration in that. Yeah, KLAS has been interviewing people who worked at Area 51 since, like, the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, this is definitely something that has a lot of evidence to support itself, and you know why this was blown to be such a big thing, I'm not sure. And it's very interesting when you look at the UFO phenomena and the media coverage, you see this a lot, where they'll kind of glom onto something, and I say they as in the media masses. For example, the Phoenix Lights. You know, that happened in March of 97, and it took a couple months for the media to kind of glom onto it. And then what happened? Like, it was big news coast to coast, pardon the pun, but it was big news all across the U.S. and all, you know, even across the world. And it's like they glom onto something, and they spotlight it, and then tomorrow it's, you know, Lindsay Lohan's arrested, or Miley Cyrus did some crazy thing in an award show. And it's like they just have their little spotlight things, and then that's it. They don't follow up. And I see a lot of that with the UFO phenomenon, not just this Area 51 story, because they should follow up on it.
Right.
And there's a select few that actually are, George Knapp being one of them. But I think that if they really started pushing for answers, like, well, okay, now you guys acknowledge what's going on there. We know it's just not being an operation for U2 flights. So what else is going on?
Right.
You know, tell us more, tell us more. But they just don't push. And it's people like you and I and George that push and push and hammer until a little glimmer of evidence comes out. And then, you know, you take the next step, but it takes years for that to come out. And I you know, with a push of the media, I would be eager to see what type of results we might get from something like this. Mm-hmm. But until that day comes, I think we're just going to have to be the army of just a select few and continue to push.
So, and since you've worked a lot with media, you've worked with the History Channel, several others, why do you feel that it goes that way? Why do you think that is?
That's an excellent question, and it's always hard for me to answer just simply because, you know, I've been talking with my UFO researcher hat on the last couple minutes. So now if I take that hat off and put my producer hat on, You know, why do they do this? I'm not sure. I don't mean to use the I word of ignorant in a insulting way,
mm-hmm.
but I think from what I've seen as a producer is that you have a lot of media people, whether they be mainstream media that are working for, you know, news agencies, or even like the cable documentary people, they just simply don't know what's out there. And it's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, how can the media cover something if they don't really know what's out there?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how do you push them to look harder? Because the evidence is there. And I think ignorance in a respectful way, it's just that lack of understanding that I think is really kind of the culprit on why we see what we do as people that do this every day. I mean, you and I are very lucky. We get to do this and really kind of get into the UFO topic in our daily lives because, as you mentioned, got to produce quite a bit for History Channel and National Geographic Channel, and I get to produce these documentaries. So I get to be kind of immersed in the whole thing. So I get a lot of it. But when you meet producers that will produce, you know, a show on cooking for a year or two, and then they produce a show on quilting for a year or two, and then they produce a show on UFOs, how could you expect them to know all that's out there? And with TV, I'm the first to say you have insane deadlines. You know, you've got to completely create, write, and wrap your head around a show in a matter of days. And that's why I enjoy the UFO work, because I have a kind of an unfair advantage when it comes to it, because I've done that work for a long time, not only in the TV realm, but just, you know, in August, I hit my 17th year of running the Black Vault. So I've kind of had a little bit of a head start when researching these topics. But to a producer who's never done that before, it is a wild beast to tackle. It really is. And so I do feel for them in one way to try and figure out how to cover the topic. But I still, in the same breath, will say I still think that there is this kind of undying stereotype that goes along with it. And so in turn, you have journalists and you have media people that kind of want to put their humor into it. They want to put their jokes in.
Right.
They want to take away from the real people that are doing the research and the real people that are doing the investigations in the field. And we see it a lot at conventions where they profile, you know, the less than a half or 0.2% of the crowd that may be, quote unquote, on the fringe. I mean, let's face it, there's a couple there that, you know, are a little bit on the fringe. And not to disrespect anybody, but, you know, I think in any group, you have kind of a very small fringe percentage of people that show up. Is that a fair assessment to just interview and profile them? No. But that's all you see when a news channel comes out and covers the story. You very rarely see that great unbiased coverage. And then they shoot it back to the studio, and then the desk people have their little joke, and then it's a ha-ha.
Right.
My whole point with all of that, just to summarize, is that my whole point is that's the stereotype that I think the general public has, and I think that a lot of media and journalist people have, because you don't want to be that one lone person to take it seriously, because you don't want to, quote unquote, ruin your career. And I think there's a lot of fear and hesitation to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that there's more journalists like George Knapp and like people like him that really do take the time to cover it in a great light, because I think it definitely deserves it.
Right, and I do agree with you. I find it to be the same type of situation which you're talking about with just that kind of ignorance there. And it's kind of like, you know, if you were going to produce a show on quilting, you know, you wouldn't have a whole lot of information yourself, so you'd have to go, you know, possibly rely on the people who do have that information. But I have found, you know, especially with some of the real professional people out there, writers like this lady who, Tracy Connor with NBC News, who I talked to the other day on Area 51, that when you do share the credible information, if you give them the information often, not always, they do appreciate that and they do run with that. They just don't know it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the deadlines are definitely a big problem. And then one thing that I found very interesting that I've seen quite a bit in the last couple of months is how, and this is another unfortunate thing, how one news agency may come out with a story, and then everybody else just kind of has to spotlight it also.
Right.
And they spotlight the same incorrect facts.
Right.
They're kind of copying each other.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a case file that I put on the Black Vault that I think you and I have talked about before, but it was on a mysterious creature that had kind of showed up. And it was said by the media that the Iranian Navy had captured this, what was being called a like kind of a sea monster. And then after, you know, this very kind of cool story with a couple photographs, they ended the story by saying, well, we think that it was a dead whale carcass and an expert was on the scene and profiled this thing. And my whole point with this story is that there was quite a few news agencies that profiled this story. And I'm talking, I mean, I think my count was like 120 different news agencies across the globe that had profiled this particular case. And for whatever reason, everybody was Googling it and the Black Vault was coming up in the number one spot. And that this case file just exploded on the site. But it was all wrong. Every news media outlet got it all wrong. It wasn't even the Iranian Navy. It was just a fishing vessel, a commercial vessel at sea. They had no expert that identified it as a whale carcass. That was completely incorrect.
Wow.
I mean, it was amazing how wrong this story was. And yet each and every one of them had the same exact quote-unquote facts. But there was a difference between what I had tried to do and all of the others, and I was the one that actually, and I didn't even find him. He found me, the actual photographer of this whatever it was, creature or whale or whatever you want to call it. But nobody bothered to do that due diligence.
Right.
So in one respect, yes, they do kind of have a daunting task of tackling whatever topic it may be inside the UFO or related paranormal phenomena. But in the other way, that's a prime example of how they're not doing their work.
Yeah.
And not, you know, just picking up the telephone or maybe putting some postings out there and delay the deadline for 12 hours, you know, and see what you could find out. Because, again, the photographer found me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think was the most amazing kind of revelation for me, was that the media copies each other and they just don't care about the facts that they're putting on paper.
Right. And it's interesting you say this, because I did watch I have watched some conversations. I'm a goofball. I watch C-SPAN and all of this stuff all the time. So I watch a lot of the media organizations discussing things like this. And they did talk about, especially recently after like some of the wrong information had gone out on the Boston bombers, how they are starting to rethink that maybe we don't need to be first. We need to check our info first, and it's better to be an hour or two later and have the right information than get egg on our face with the wrong information. Now, this is for big stories. Unfortunately, they still don't care when it comes to paranormal. But it is kind of funny that they're starting to think, well, maybe we should actually check our facts first.
Yeah. I hope that you look, I hope they do. But, again, you've got news outlets, and here's a UFO case that kind of recently hit the airwaves, and I hope I don't offend anybody if anybody thinks that this is genuine. But there was a UFO case, I believe, in Florida, which to me screamed a water droplet on a camera lens.
Right.
And it was said to be this UFO that was kind of sucking water out of the pool or possibly using it as a fuel source or, you know, quite a few different theories. Now, on paper, it sounds great. But to me, if you look at the photos, you know, you kind of clearly see that this was, you know, a water droplet on the lens and light refraction or whatever. For me, and again, I mean no offense to anybody who really looked at this and thinks it might be
no,
genuine.
Agreed. We've talked about this story and we feel similar.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So then, you know, I think that's another example of why would the media profile that case when there are so many other cases out there that do warrant attention.
Right.
And I think that there's something to a lot of the cases that are out there. And that's what really confuses me, because being in the entertainment industry and, you know, I mean, working in the high-definition world, I can tell you for networks like History Channel and National Geographic Channel, things as small as a tiny speck of dust on a camera lens that's completely out of focus and you can barely see it, will actually create a red, you know, a red flag with the network, and the footage is kicked back, and you have to either reshoot it or try and figure out how to fix it. And my whole point in that is that we study these little minute details. And I would think that media people that, you know, work with cameras every day should see that. And with that fact, should choose to show something that doesn't really look like water refraction on the lens, but looks like a physical object in the sky. And there are hundreds of those cases just from this year that they could look into, that they could profile, that they don't have to put a definitive answer on. They don't have to say it's an alien spacecraft, but it's something physical that you can look at. And why they ignore those is beyond me. And I hope that those days are starting to change. I don't see it,
Right. Definitely,
at least not yet, but we can definitely hope and pray that they do.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Unfortunately, I don't see it. They love posting those terrible ones and just running with them, but
yeah.
Cross our fingers. At least they're covering it more, it seems, the phenomena. So hopefully one day they'll figure, well, maybe we should carry or look at some more credible stuff.
Yeah, I hope so, because I think that there's a lot out there, and I think that it'll do a lot of good for what I call kind of the stereotype that has been landed on most of us, that we're doing this work and that there's a lot of great research out there, but the media just kind of seemingly refuses to look at it.
Yeah. So I've interviewed you before, and, you know, a lot for stories and this and that, but I think this is the first time you've been on the podcast. So just in case there are some people out there, because I know we've got quite a few foreigners and stuff who don't know who you are, you've got a really interesting story about how you got started in this, because usually when someone comes on and says, I've been into this for 17 years, that person is like 50 years old.
Right.
You're not. You got into this when you were very young. Could you tell me about how this all got started for you, and what motivated you to do this at a young age?
Absolutely, yeah. I started 17 years ago. I was 15 years old, which makes me 32 years old. I'm still a little old, but makes me 32. And really how I got started was I was fascinated, as I'm sure many and most of your listeners are, by this, you know, UFO topic, this fringe element of society that seemingly never gets the attention it deserves. And I was fascinated by it by a young age. Now, just to say up front, I never had a UFO experience. I never had an alien encounter. I mean, a lot of people, you know, like you said, might be a little bit older than I am being in the field for that long. But also, on the other hand, they have kind of this amazing story to tell. Like they had one UFO sighting only, but it was like the most amazing encounter, which struck their interest. I don't have that. I was just kind of a 15-year-old kid who was curious, and I went onto the internet and was kind of reading some UFO websites. And at the time, this will kind of date me, but I don't even think Google was even around, or at least not big. It was all about Alta Vista at the time. And, you know, I remember searching Alta Vista, and even then a million pages would come up when you would search UFO, and I would look through it, and you would just kind of see the same story over and over, and then sometimes you would see the same story with different facts, and you go, well, wait a minute, how'd the story change? And then I came across a website that had a government document on it, or so it said, and this was an official declassified government record that described a 1976 encounter in Iran. Now, this has been infamously known in the UFO arena as the 1976 Iran incident. And this was just a 4-page document, and I read through it online. And, you know, I've always said it, and I stand by it. It read to me like an X-Files episode. Like my grandmother, who is now looking down on me from above, who taught me the internet on America Online 1.0. She was the one that got me into the X-Files. And I read this thing, and it really read like that, where you had a UFO that really seemingly, there's no other way to describe it other than being a mothership, because there was actually multiple UFOs coming out of this original craft. One of them actually lands on Earth. And this was all in this document. Now, of course, I'm summarizing very quickly. Mm-hmm. It goes into greater detail, but you know, I read this thing and I go, wow, this can't be real. And then at the very end of this website, it says, if you don't believe it's real, you know, you can file what's called this Freedom of Information Act request to get this actual record from an agency called the Defense Intelligence Agency, you know, the DIA. Now, again, being 15, I had no idea what the Freedom of Information Act was. I had no idea what the Defense Intelligence Agency was. I really had no clue what I was getting myself into. But they give you this Freedom of Information Act request letter that you just fill in your name and address and send it off to the Defense Intelligence Agency. And sure enough, a few weeks later, I got this 4-page document in the mail. I learned what the Freedom of Information Act was. And in short, it was a law that said that any U.S. citizen, age didn't matter, or excuse me, any person worldwide, age doesn't matter, can request information from the government. And pending it doesn't fit into about 9 different exemption categories, which explains all the blacked out, you know, marks on government documents, that they had to send it to you. And, you know, I was shocked that this law existed, and I was shocked that a 15-year-old kid could use it. Then I was shocked that this document actually came. So I read through it, and verbatim, it was exactly what I read online, and that was it. I'm telling you, I was hooked. I went back online. I looked everywhere for government records pertaining to UFOs, and there really wasn't anything to be found. There was a couple things here or there, but I needed an archive. I needed a place where you could go and look into different topics, like Area 51, like UFOs, like, you know, multiple different government secrets, which that's what it later turned into. But there were no places to find that. So I started filing these Freedom of Information Act requests, and I used my first letter as a template and then just kind of reworked it and started requesting different records. And I was astonished to find that there weren't hundreds and there weren't thousands. But over time, I found out that there were tens of thousands of pages that you could find on the UFO phenomenon. And then as you get into it, you realize that they're not even supposed to exist. And so right. What I did was I took all of these documents and I scanned them and started putting them online, and that's how I made what has now become 17 years later, from what I understand, it's the largest online private collection in the world. Mm-hmm. It's about 750,000 pages later. We've got about 750,000 pages online, and I've got quite a few tens of thousands, actually, that are waiting to be put online. I'm hoping to reach 1 million by the end of the year. That's a very aggressive. That's a very aggressive number to hit. We'll see if I do it. Now it's recorded, so it's out there into the cosmos. So we'll see if I'll accomplish that feat. But it's grown beyond any leaps and bounds that I thought I would ever grow it, and it's come a long way since day one. And obviously, it's not just about UFOs anymore, because once I would file all the Freedom of Information Act requests to all the agencies that I could think of, one of the biggest games that you have to play is the waiting game. And you have to wait sometimes months, years, and I wish I was kidding, it was about 12 and a half years is my record.
Wow.
Waiting for a document to come. That's a long time to wait.
Yeah.
When you think of those facts, you know, the Freedom of Information Act, you know, I'm lucky. Time is on my side just because I started at a young age. But sometimes when investigators are in their 60s, in their 70s, you know, and they want to use the Freedom of Information Act, waiting 10 years isn't always a luxury that's out there. And I don't mean to make light of that note, but it's just kind of a concern when you really start to think about the Freedom of Information Act and the root of what it should be. And what it is, you look at the games that they play and making you wait, the playing the runaround game, and you look at that, and it's a difficult process, but one that I would urge anybody to use because it works. And I've got about 750,000 reasons and examples of why it works that you can read on theblackvault.com, which, you know, like I said, has grown way beyond what I ever thought it would.
Right. And, you know, and you're not the only one who's had to wait. I mean, even with this recent Area 51 story, the National Security Archive at George Washington University waited 8 years for their FOIA to get fulfilled to further declassify this document.
Yeah, and that's a very it's a very tough thing because, you know, when you wait that long, you forget you even filed the request in the first
place. Right.
You know, and I try and keep track of all of the requests that I send out there, but it sometimes it gets hard because I've expanded to so many different topics. And again, you know, once I was doing the UFO thing, once I kind of exhausted and was waiting for documents to come for the UFO requests, because once those responses come, it kind of spawns, you know, 100 other requests. I started looking into other topics just to kind of fill the gaps. And I realized how much there really is that's out there to find. But that's a very difficult thing to get used to in waiting, because you do, you just forget that you filed the request in the first place. And my kudos out to the National Security Archive, because they did something that that I want to do even more. I've done it in the past, and sometimes it's successful, sometimes it's not, but it's what's called a mandatory declassification review. And I'm going to go through quite a bit of the older UFO documents. And what that means in short is that, let's say in 1995, they send you a document and it's, you know, completely blacked out, which I've got thousands of examples of UFO records that are considered top secret and are literally blacked out from top to bottom. Well, periodically, you can request what's called an MDR, or a mandatory declassification review. And you can say, you know, look, CIA, this document is from 1952. You know, this is over 50 years ago. There's really no reason that this should be a threat to national security. Now, I am a firm believer that there are secrets that should be kept. And I always push that point that I do believe that we are a nation that should have some secrets. But there is a line that not everything should be secret. Mm-hmm. And we should start to see what was going on in the 1940s and the 1950s. And when you issue a mandatory declassification review, the CIA will go back to that 1952 document and re-review all that blacked out stuff. And if they feel that now in 2013, if it's able to be released, they'll go ahead and kind of take away the black, so to speak, and then send you a less redacted copy. Mm-hmm. And that's happened in the past, specifically with the National Security Agency. And a lawsuit in the early 80s was brought about to sue the National Security Agency for UFO records. And this goes back to the Citizens Against UFO Secrecy, and I believe Peter Gersten was the one that led the legal charge. And there was don't quote me on the amount of pages, but roughly a 20 of a page affidavit that explained to the judge in top secret why UFO records should not be released to the public. And the National Security Agency won that particular case, that after the judge read this top secret affidavit on why the material should be not released, they sided with the NSA and everything remained top secret. Well, years later, after the top secret affidavit was released, it was completely blacked out. Years after that, a mandatory declassification review was filed and another one was released, kind of less redacted. But it was still, you know, heavily blacked out. So my whole point is that periodically we have to go and kind of push the government to look at some of these documents and reconsider what should and should not be classified. Mm-hmm. And the National Security Archive, kudos again to them, because they got them to look at this document that not only declassified the Area 51 acknowledgement, but also quite a bit of details about the early U2 program and what was called the Oxcart program. Which was amazing and fascinating history. I mean, even away from UFOs, if you're an aviation buff and nut like I am, then definitely take a look at this document because it's well worth the read. But sometimes the government doesn't know what they have. And just to give the final thought, there are records from the 1920s and the 1930s. The last I checked was one from 1917. That was still considered classified in the National Archives
in
Washington, D.C. Now, that's a long time to keep a document classified.
Yeah.
So when you look at those facts, it really makes you wonder, what else is there that we have yet to discover? Mm-hmm. And, you know, my answer to that is probably a lot. And I can't wait to see what more and more trickles out in the years to come.
Right. Pretty exciting. Now, and just to kind of note that you weren't just like kind of casually interested when you did this when you were younger. You really got into it. You must have spent hours and hours, and you even got some attention. You got a visit, right, to your high school from some, was it the CIA or some authorities?
Well, no, that was, yes, to start in the beginning, yeah, very interested in it. Kind of just dug in, started spending hours and hours on it. Arguably, should I have spent more time on schoolwork? Probably. But, you know, I was just kind of in love with what I was doing and creating the website. And a quick note, I actually, in the very beginning, I couldn't afford a scanner, and I typed in by hand every document that I received.
Wow.
Which was a pretty tedious process, but that's obviously what took the most time in the very beginning. Later, I obviously got a scanner, and the rest was history. The visit to high school actually wasn't by the CIA or the FBI. It was actually from NBC, different acronym, outside the government.
Oh, NBC.
Yeah, that was a big special, a two-hour special that they did profiling Whitley Strieber's book, Confirmation,
uh-huh.
and did a two-hour documentary. And that was kind of what put not only me but the Black Vault website on the map. Art Bell had interviewed me shortly prior to that television show being shot, and I was about 17 years old when that happened. And was on Art Bell when I was about 16 or 17. And that also, I mean, you know, when you appear on Art Bell's show or back then, which I know he's back now, which is good to hear. But when you appear on an audience that size, it kind of just shoots you, you know, into the spotlight, so to speak. And I definitely owe my early attention to the website and to the work, and I owe a lot to Art Bell and Whitley Strieber both, who, you know, choose to profile that work early on, and that helped get a lot of attention and traffic, because it was that attention and traffic and letters that I received from all around the world that kind of drove me to keep going with it. Because I can't tell you how many times I just wanted to give up dealing with the government.
Right.
It is one of the hardest things to deal with. You know, it really is. It's an entity that is bigger than I could ever explain in a radio program. It's an entity that, you know, I call them the referee that makes the rules for a game that, you know, is only one-sided, and they go first, and you have to sit on the sidelines, but
yeah,
for the opponent. You know, I mean, it's like every unfair advantage you could ever imagine, and that is kind of what the stakes are. And I wanted to give up quite a bit, but it was that attention and the letters that I received and just kind of the thank yous from around the world that kind of kept me going. And here we are 17 years later, and I haven't given up and kind of keep pushing forward. And I don't plan on giving up, because I vowed to myself, I said, if this is a grand conspiracy and cover-up, if this is something that, you know, they want to just go away, then someone like me giving up is a win for them.
Right.
Oh, and that's what I kind of told myself early on, because you get so frustrated so quickly, and I'm impatient, and that's when my Italian comes out. When you get frustrated for whatever reason, when you're Italian, when you got you get a little bit more hot blooded, and you just want to just say forget it, and that's what I've wanted to do in the past, but. You know, here I am. I vowed to myself not to do it. I haven't, and don't plan on doing it.
Awesome. So, and thank goodness you do that. And thanks for clarifying that story. That's funny. I had it so wrong. I guess it was a three-letter acronym. So I had that part.
No, that's okay. And you know why, though? It's a very common question, and I think in the NBC program, and that story has stuck on the internet, is that my sister talked about it being an X-Files episode in our house. Like having me live there. This was going way back when we all still lived at home. But also, the FBI used to call our house, and my mom had said that on the air. And that, I think, is how this story kind of stuck. So mm-hmm. It's a very commonly asked question about the FBI visiting my house. The reality is they just called me on the telephone quite a few times, and my mom would say, you know, well, he's in school right now. Once they figured out they meant John Jr., my dad's John also, and they really didn't know what I was getting into in the very beginning. It's not like I advertised, hey, I'm filing freedom of information requests to the government.
Right.
So I think the first few phone calls from the FBI completely freaked my mom out.
Right.
She quickly got used to it.
And were they calling just for clarifications on your requests?
Yeah, that's it. No, you know, no threats ever. You know, I've never received any official threats or, you know, warnings against my life. You know, unfortunately, I think the last count I had 19 death threats outside the government. Those have come in through email and telephone. But nothing on an official level. Those are always disconcerting, but
yeah.
So I figured, hey, you know what? If somebody really meant that stupid threat, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you. So
wow.
It just comes in the territory of this crazy world we live in.
Right. So moral of that story is let your mom know before you start doing this, or if you just want to play a trick on your mom and see how she reacts, I'd be more along those lines not to tell him so I could see her face when the FBI called for you. What the hell?
Yeah, I'm going to get a kick out of it. I won't lie.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, I guess one last question.
Sure.
Would be, out of all your files, and of course everybody can go to theblackvault.com. In fact, you have an Area 51 area where people can see these Area 51 documents that you got years ago before this last one, which shows Area 51 by name in these government files. But what has been some of the files that you felt were the most eye-opening or were, you know, your biggest score?
Wow.
Especially when it comes to UFOs. Maybe even just highlight one if you have a ton.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's quite – how much time do you have? I don't want to go on too long.
Right, right.
Well, you know, to very quickly explain, you know, there's quite a few discoveries. It's hard to pinpoint just one. You have a couple things to look at very quickly. Number one is when you look at the records from the Defense Intelligence Agency, number one, they're not supposed to exist. And what I mean by that is the government tries to tell you, the general public, that they haven't had an interest in UFOs since 1969. That was the closure of Project Blue Book and their official investigation. Some of the most heavily blacked out documents, still considered secret and top secret, come from the last 15 years. So you have to ask that question. What is so classified top secret about the UFO phenomena, and why is the government archiving these things when they have no interest? Okay, so that proves a lie, and that proves the importance of the phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have, you know, undisputed evidence that on the books for years and years, for decades even, on how to report UFOs. I had talked about it, gotten onto a History Channel program. There have been quite a few manuals that have been circulated before, but have since been taken off the books. Well, this one specifically from the United States Air Force, specifically in black and white, spelled out unidentified flying objects. Well, when I got the Huffington Post and Lee Spiegel to profile it, he called the Pentagon like any good journalist would do. And he's, you know, he's one of the exceptions to the rule. And just to kind of give the kudos to him, because he did his due diligence, called the Pentagon, tried to get them to respond to this manual that specifically outlined UFOs and unidentified flying objects. And within literally 48 to 72 hours later, with no response to the Huffington Post, the Pentagon and the United States Air Force completely rewrote what's known as Air Force Manual 10-206 and completely took out unidentified flying objects, completely omitted the chapter that talked about these types of reports and said that it was simply a coincidence that they modified this thing when the media was going to put the spotlight on it. And that, to me, is a huge revelation and a huge quote-unquote coincidence, which I don't believe is coincidence, mainly because the Air Force had modified this thing, and I have the proof. They modified it multiple times in the previous few years, and they never once felt the need to take out this entire chapter, let alone the reference to UFOs. And then all of a sudden the media asks the question, and then it's poof, gone.
Right.
So I think that that's another example. So, you know, there's a lot there. There really is. And
right.
Smoking gun, irrefutable proof that it's extraterrestrials? No. It's not out there. But it is a giant puzzle. And each one of these documents, not only that I've mentioned, the ones that, you know, you can just go, like you said, to theblackvault.com and go in the UFO section. tens of thousands of pages to download. Once you start putting all these pieces of the puzzle together and just use a little bit of common sense and logic, that's the conclusion you'll come up with, because everything else doesn't make sense except that it's potentially an extraterrestrial connected phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Black and white proof? No. But is the evidence there to help support that theory? Absolutely. And
right.
I think that's something that is definitely provable with the documents that the government gives out.
Right. Well, I know you got to get running, and I want to thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you so much for not giving up and keeping up with this. You've been a part of a lot of great productions, some of the best, I think, UFO documentaries out there, and I'm sure that we're going to see a lot from you in the future as well.
I appreciate that. Anytime you want to talk, feel free to give me a call.
All right. Definitely. We'll do this again. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much to John. He's got some interesting information, and it's so great that he's done these FOIAs and done these television shows, which are all really good. You can go see theblackvault.com to go look at some of these files. Make sure that you have a month or two of free time to look through these tens of thousands of documents. It may even take more. But then once you do it, you know, you're going to be one smart dude, and you're going to be able to tell us all what's going on. And when you do that, give me a call, because I want to know what the hell's going on with all this stuff. So theblackvault.com. Thank you so much, John, for being on the show. Otherwise, the news that we talked about earlier, you can see at openminds.tv. Again, there's a new spacing out that has been posted. We have some stories on there about Jesse Marcel, including his own UFO sighting that you may not be aware of, and some other stuff up there, and kind of a memorial for Jesse Marcel Jr., who did pass away, which we had talked about earlier. And then there's also some stuff with Bob Lazar and lots of cool news and stuff like that. And then we do have those stories on those other UFO videos that were seen in the last couple weeks. So openminds.tv for a lot about all of that. And as usual, I want to thank the guys who make the music. So thank you to Two Earth Minutes, who's made the closed music that we're going to hear in a minute. And thank you to Caleb Hanks with the opening music. All of it I really, really like. And I really, really like you listeners too. So thanks for joining us at Open Mind UFO Radio. And we will talk to you next week, people. Adios, muchachos. We'll be right back.